This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Becky Sykes. How are you, Becky?
I'm very well, thank you, Chris. Excellent, nice to be here.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we're recording this, I'm recording this in my studio. And where are you, Becky?
I'm just on the south coast of England next to Brighton in a small seaside town.
Oh, okay. I'm going down to Eastbourne this weekend for my wedding anniversary. So,
congratulations.
Yes. You are the program director for the Regenerative Viticultural Foundation.
I am indeed. It's quite a mouthful. I am aware of that.
It is getting a little bit of a mouthful. What I wouldn't mind finding out today is getting an overview of regenerative viticulture. It's one of those things that, to be honest, I've been in the wine trade for quite a while and I only really started hearing about it recently. So it's not something I've sort of been following myself. So do you want to just tell us a little bit about what regenerative viticulture is, and then we'll get a little bit of a history of that?
Yes, absolutely. So regenerative viticulture is a way of farming grapes that works with nature to restore vineyard soils and biodiversity and reduces dependency on synthetic chemicals. It's no surprise that you haven't heard of it really until recently, because although the phrase regenerative agriculture has been around for a while, it's only the last few years that it's really been applied to viticulture. And so, yes, it's fairly new, though lots of people have been doing something quite similar called agroecology or other names for it for decades, really. So it's not actually a new concept as such.
It sounds a little bit like organics, but you mentioned that reducing synthetics chemicals. So organics normally says the chemicals have to be natural, even if it is things like cyanide. Not that they use cyanide, but that's a natural chemical.
Yes. So we are looking to reduce synthetic chemicals because there are other alternatives. So you mentioned organics, and organics is a real gold standard of growing, as is biodynamics. And organics has different things that you can use instead of synthetic chemicals, but things like copper sulfate, but that has its own kind of negative aspects as well. What we're interested in regenerative viticulture is looking at almost like the whole system. We call it an ecosystem, looking at the whole ecosystem of the vineyard, every single aspect and the way they all interact. And some of the chemicals that we use in conventional viticulture, they have quite a big impact on some of the kind of different elements of this ecosystem and essentially stop it working properly. So, but we're looking to reduce as much as possible. We don't have really strict rules. It's not about telling people what they must do, and it's not about telling people what they can't do. It's about encouraging people to make certain changes that improve their ecosystem.
How does it differ from something like sustainability? There's a sustainable viticultural process as well. And it sounds quite similar in terms of focusing on reduction of inputs as opposed to hardcore rules about what you must do and wear silly hats and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. There are lots of similarities between all the different schemes of work. But with regenerative, what we're really looking at and what isn't looked at in sustainability per se is this actually trying to restore the functioning of the soil, this soil microbiome. So people are getting used to thinking about their gut microbiome now, and that's becoming quite common to talk about. But the soil is the same. So there's all these microbes in the soil, and they're all doing, if we let them do their job, then we can reduce the inputs. But we're not going to say to someone, stop doing all these applications of all these chemicals. I mean, that is the ideal. But if you just went cold turkey and stopped, then you probably wouldn't end up with much of a yield at the end of your growing season.
Okay, so it's similar to sustainable viticulture, but more focused on the soils. That's the big picture stuff. Tell us a bit about your Regenerative Viticultural Foundation and what you do there, Becky.
So the foundation was set up, I think maybe almost 2 years ago, but really I'm the first employee, not quite a year in the job. It was set up by a guy called Stephen Cronk, who had bought a vineyard called Domaine Mirabeau in Provence in South France.
And Rosé, quite famous for it.
Yes, yeah, that's the man. And so he'd looked at this soil in this vineyard and it was really destroyed. And he was thinking, I'm going to do organics to try and improve the soil. And then when he really looked into it, he realized that organics wasn't actually going to regenerate his soils. It wasn't actually going to improve his soils. And so he'd heard about this thing, regenerative, and he was trying to find some information from somewhere, see if there was an organization that would help him. And he couldn't find one anyway. So he reached out to this woman called Mimi Castile, who is also now one of our trustees, who's this really fantastic grower from Oregon, and she's a microbiologist, and she knows everything there is to know about soil health. And she said, there's absolutely no way that I want to set up an organization. There's so many organizations, but they really genuinely couldn't find an organization to help Stephen to improve his soils. And so they set about setting up this foundation. And so we're a global foundation. The seven trustees are in different parts of the world. Me as an employee, and I'm based in the UK, but we really do have a global lens. It's about trying to help grape growers all around the world to take that next step to improve their ecosystem, their vineyard soils, increase the biodiversity on their land and below ground as well. And so we kind of do that by several different streams. One is looking at the science to see what actual scientific evidence there is behind all these concepts that we're talking about in regenerative, and to see where things haven't yet been proven, what studies need to be done, because a lot of the scientific studies, they show proof of quite small aspects of viticulture, what you do if you change one thing. But it's finding that evidence base for what happens to the whole ecosystem and restoring the whole ecosystem. So having the science is one stream of what we do. Another one is trying to provide people with the tools, the toolkit that they need. So information on things like options for what they can do to get rid of weeds under vine, different information on irrigation and things like that. So all those different aspects of vineyard management. And then the other side is kind of setting up we're trying to set up these kind of support groups almost, because when you're stepping outside what's been conventionally done and what maybe your parents and your grandparents did, and there's a whole system of advisors, consultants, agronomists that goes with that. If you actually then want to step outside that and do something different, you need to find almost a new support base, because it can be quite lonely to take that step. So it's kind of trying to put growers in touch with people locally who might also be doing something similar, who might be one step further down the line. And who can say, oh, don't do that. That didn't work for me. That won't work in this soil, or that won't work with our climate or something. And so trying to help people to help each other, because we're quite a small charity. We can't help the whole world. So it's setting up some kind of groups to try and get people to help each other. That's essentially what we're doing.
Okay, and you're a charity technically, is that right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We're a charity. We've got some founding supporters. Who have donated some money to help us run the charity. People like people that your listeners would have heard of, like Decanter and Moët Hennessy, and I'm not going to name them all because then I'll get in trouble because I'll forget one or two of them. But yes, yeah, so we have got some. That's where our funding comes from donation.
And Miguel Torres, I hear that's right, isn't it? Is he
So
there?
he's not us. So this is quite interesting. He's not one of our founding
Because
supporters.
he's quite keen on it.
He's super keen on it. So he has set up the Regenerative Viticulture Association, which is a different organization. And that is set up, it's got a very strong kind of Spanish language lens to it. And they have set up a certification scheme. So they're focusing very much on going down that route and encouraging people to certify as regenerative.
Okay, we'll talk about certification at a later date. But let's just talk about some of the practices that you're looking at. Well, I think you described them as tools in the vineyard. And I'll just make a little comment that organics does claim to be all about the health of the soils. So I was a bit surprised you said that there was no organization that was really about the health of the soils or regenerating soils, because I thought that's what organics was supposed to be about. Whether they actually do that, that's another matter. But what they claim is that's their goal.
I guess we have a very specific focus on regenerating vineyards, so building up soil organic matter to increase it year on year. My understanding of organic, and I'm not an organic expert, I know an awful lot about regenerative viticulture, and organic viticulture is not my speciality. So apologies if I misconstrued anything about organics. But my understanding for organics, it is about soil health, but it's not about increasing that organic matter year on year, because in doing that and trying to sequester carbon in the soil as well, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute. But by increasing the percentage of organic matter in the soil, then that is a way of feeding the soil. That it's a much more intense focus in regenerative than it is in organic.
All right, well, let's talk about some of those things. You mentioned carbon, and one of the things I'm on a little bit of a mission is to understand the carbon footprint in wine and what's happening and why it's happening and what the processes are to reduce the carbon footprint in wine. And I've been looking at bottles for a while now and alternative measures because that's a big chunk of the carbon footprint. But you always think of, I'm growing an organic product. It must be pulling net carbon out of the atmosphere and making a product. Therefore, it must be at least carbon negative. But it's not really, is it?
Not over the whole chain. If you're talking about the whole wine value chain from growing the grape through to the taking the bottle out of your fridge and having your glass of wine, then no, I think there is a carbon footprint associated with that, unfortunately. And there are some organisations doing really fantastic things, as I'm sure you found out in the process of all that research you've been doing. But in terms of the vineyard, we're looking to sequester as much carbon as we possibly can. It's almost, though, a byproduct of actually rebuilding this soil health. We're building up the soil carbon by building up the soil organic matter. It's almost like a byproduct. And people are doing all sorts of things to try to increase the carbon in the soil. They're making something called biochar, which is burning almost like charcoal, and that you then compost down and put into the soil, and that is stored for a much longer time in that form of carbon. Carbon storage is quite complex, and I don't pretend to
Because it breaks
understand.
down into methane, and which is even worse from a global warming point of view.
Yeah, and I don't pretend to understand all the ins and outs of carbon storage in the soil, but there are versions or forms that are what they call labile, which means it's quite easily released. And that's the stuff that the microbes in the soil are respiring and things like that. And then there's what they call recalcitrant, which is stored for a much longer time. So there's lots of work being done on that. But in terms of the overall carbon footprint of growing the grapes, if you can reduce the amount of synthetic chemicals you're putting on there, because they're very intensive to create to start with, and then the distribution and the application obviously also requires it emits greenhouse gases. So you want to reduce those completely. You want to reduce how much you're ploughing the soil or cultivating or tilling, whatever people want to call it, because that then releases some of that carbon back into the atmosphere. So what you want to do is you want to keep your soil covered all year round with living plants. So, I mean, here in the UK, we've often got grass or something it's much easier in a cooler climate, a moister climate. If you keep those living roots in the soil all year round, then those plants are almost like mini solar panels all year. They're photosynthesizing, they're feeding the microbes in the soil, they're putting more carbon into the soil all year round. Whereas if you have bare soil, that's not happening. And there's all sorts of other bad things that happen with having bare soil. You get your nutrients wash off in kind of heavy rains and things like that. And then in the summer, if you've kept your ground covered and you have a heat spike in a hotter region, then you get a difference in soil temperature between bare soil and soil that's got grass on it, because they say it's about 18 degrees centigrade. I'm not quite sure who did the study, but there's these really cool kind of thermal photos of soil undercover and bare soil in a heat spike, and the temperature difference is quite vast. They also allow water to filter down into the soil as well and to be stored there. So keeping the ground covered is one of the kind of core tenets of regenerative agriculture in general, and keeping living roots in there, especially if they've all got different lengths, then and they go down, it stops the soil getting too compacted, which is one of the problems with driving up and down in your tractor. I mean, the tractors are great, but they're heavy things, and they they compact the soil, which means it doesn't store water very well, and it stops the microbes from doing their job as well.
I want to just go back to the fundamental tenet, though, of you're saying you want to build up the organic material in the soils.
Yes.
Byproduct of that is that you're sequestering carbon into the soils to do that, but that's, you're not really aiming to sequester carbon. You're aiming to build up the organic material in the soil. Why do you want to increase the organic material in the soils?
When I was earlier on talking about restoring the ecosystem, that is how we're restoring the ecosystem. We need to have lots of organic matter in there. It feeds this, what they call soil food web. I don't know if you've come across this concept of the soil food web. There's this really cool American woman called Dr. Elaine Ingham. She came up with this concept. And it's all about how, different microbes in the soil do different things. And they all need organic matter. You're feeding those microbes in your soil with organic matter, essentially. So in order to try to restore this ecosystem, it functions on organic matter. That's what it needs. Because what you're doing with having this, all these microbes in the soil with all this organic matter, is that you are restoring the kind of functions of the soil for bringing nutrients to the vine. So you've got part of these fungi in the soil are called mycorrhizal fungi, which are the ones that kind of interact in this symbiotic way with the roots of the vine. So the mycorrhizal fungi, they're attracted towards the roots of the vine. It's a really cool video you can see where you actually see them attracted towards the roots, and then they kind of grow into the roots. But because they have these long kind of hair-like things called fungal hyphae, they can go out a really long way. They can go out kilometers. They can join hands. There's all this kind of crazy stuff going on under our feet that we don't know nothing about. They say that a teaspoon of soil can hold something like 1 billion different cells and 100,000 different species, and that there's more creatures in a teaspoon of soil than there are people on the planet or something. And there's what the crazy statistics. But basically, they're all kind of doing different things. And when a plant photosynthesizes, it keeps about 60% of the energy for itself, for its own processes. And then it gives away about 40%, apparently, to all these microbes in the soil. And it sends out different signals depending on what nutrients it needs. So the nutrients are in the soil as kind of a mineral form, rock form. The plant can't access these, so it needs these microbes to eat each other and do all sorts of weird stuff, and then this brings it to the plant in plant available form. So if you've got lots of organic matter in the soil, you've got lots of these bugs, they kind of make up, they constitute your organic matter, and so they can hopefully give the plant as much nutrients as it needs. I mean, you might still have to give some additional nutrients, but the idea hopefully is that you don't then end up having to put lots of fertilizers on the vine. Obviously, you have to keep monitoring this. You have to keep testing your soil to see what's in there, testing the sap in the vine to see what's actually making it into the vine, and then you can work out what's going on. But the idea is this kind of idyllic, almost ideal, is that you can have enough fertility and nutrition coming from your soil that you don't need to add or bring in extra fertilizer.
Not all regions need fertilizers or long term anyway. And there's the old saying about vines, you know, treat them mean to keep them keen. In so much as that, if you give a vine too many nutrients, it will focus on vegetative growth rather than producing quality grapes. So is it really important to feed the vine too much? Because there's a reason why some of the best vineyards in Italy are on hills where the soils are very thin. Building up the soils, are we actually starting to compromise the quality of the fruit? And the vine loves it and it gets very big and grows very vegetatively, but then as a viticulturist, you're having to trim it up and manage it. And do you know what I mean? Are we not trying to solve a problem that from a vine's point of view isn't relevant?
So the place like an Italian hillside, which is a really good example, I think you'd find that they'd have very, very low organic matter there. But they would have problems with vigor, and they probably are applying fertilizer, I would say. I mean, I don't know. It's a fictitious Italian hillside vineyard, but it's very difficult to build up soil organic matter. And that's why it's kind of a long-term challenge. It's not something that you can do overnight. And in fact, in very dry places, it's really, really quite difficult. And it's a slow process and requires a lot of application of composted, well, whatever you've got to hand to compost, but maybe your grape pressings, your marc, maybe manure if you've got some manure, or whatever you've got that are cuttings. Because if you think that every year you're taking away from the vineyard, you're taking away the grapes, you're losing nutrients when you do that. You're also taking away the prunings. You prune off about what 90% of the growth, don't you? So each year you're taking that away from the vineyard. You have to replace that with something. You can't just keep taking it away. Yes, you do need to do it. I don't think it's ever going to be a problem that we're going to end up with too much vigor in the kind of traditional wine regions, let's say. It might be slightly different in the UK, where we do have more vigor issues, in which case people use cover crops and things like that to try and control the vigor, to try and give some competition. They might, do something different.
I know in New Zealand, for example, Sauvignon Blanc is an absolute monster, and if you give it any nutrients, it just goes poof. It grows. It's like a bouffant hare that suddenly just springs out. And because a lot of the vineyards are on valley floors, a lot of them, they're quite deep, rich soil. So I imagine the problem, particularly in older wine regions where the soil's been worked for hundreds of years, then I can imagine there being quite a problem with some of the depth of the organic material in the soils. Well, we'll talk about what regenerative viticulture actually does next week in the show. I think at this stage, Becky, I think we'll close it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.